brothers looked at radio and saw a gadget.
Walter M. Sterling
looked at radio and saw a household possession capable of enriching the lives of millions.
All right, good evening. Walter M. Sterling, a live radio show on Sunday night from 10 p.m. Eastern to 1 a.m. Eastern. It is a joy and a thrill to not have to deal with my kids, my wife, or any of the other things that probably annoy you too. Dr. Dave's weather.
Sterling on Sunday. Coming up.
Rocky moves to Florida. There's a toilet cam man on a cruise ship and everything in between. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Barger. That's coming up on Florida Stories.
Hudson Valley's favorite jingle joint has a hooker problem. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling at night.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I rate the seven police commissioners I served under during my career with the New York City Police Department. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
For Sterling on Sundays, I am James Parker, and this is Florida Story. Thank you.
I want to start off with the idea that Sylvester Stallone is leaving California to move to Florida. And he's saying this is permanent. This is going to be their primary residence. And this is tough. He's a New Yorker. He grew up in the East Coast, but he says he's very attached to California. That's where he got his break. That's where he's been working all these years. And this is where his career's been. This is where his friends are. This is where his kids were born. This is where his kids were raised. This is where they went to school. This is where they not only had a house, they bought their own plot of land. They designed their own house. They built their dream house to their specifications. They are living their dream life in their dream house. However, all their kids are grown now, moved off. Two of them have moved to New York City, and one of them moved to Florida.
New York City!
And so now they're just staying in a place that where their life used to be. And Sylvester is like 77 years old, and so much of what he's doing isn't necessarily California necessary anyway. And they're giving up their dream house to take a chance on this because it's better. It's not just better for the taxes. It's also better because you don't have to have an armed guard in CVS to go get some toothpaste. And isn't it crazy? As crazy as Florida is, I mean, I have a segment dedicated to how crazy Florida is. California's doing worse.
Wait,
Hold my beer.
My next story, Florida story, goes to Port St. Lucie. There's an adult entertainment venue called Body Talk. You can guess what goes on there. Yeah, it's probably not that song, but it's the same idea. Well, a 24-year-old young man went into Body Talk, and he was not familiar with the etiquette. When these girls come up to you and they pay attention to you and they talk to you and they dance for you, you're supposed to be tipping them at some point. Well, he had been there for a long time, for a couple of hours, just having drinks, not tipping. Well, then after just drinking, he starts to get saucy. Look, it's one thing to not tip, but then to insult people or, you know, make jokes about them, you're not going to make very many friends in the adult club, 24-year-old Florida man. And so this one escalated when, on surveillance video, you can see one of the workers there, a 24-year-old woman who looks absolutely beautiful in her mugshot. I can't believe she's working at one of these places. She takes a stack of money and slaps him in the face with it. And he's kind of drunk and staggers. And then she drops the money and gives him an open-handed slap in the face. She gets charged with like assault and battery. But I don't know. I think they might want to let her off the hook there. I mean, he didn't even tip.
Hold my beer.
Stay tuned. Part two of Florida Stories is right around the corner. Subscribe to the Florida Stories podcast and get past episodes at waltersterlingshow.com. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Here's a good thing to tell. Imagine being in the Tampa, Florida airport this weekend. At about 2 p.m. today, Tampa International Airport was reporting that 279 of their 430 flights for the day were delayed. 16 other flights were canceled, but almost 300 flights were delayed. That means 40% of Sunday's flights have been affected. According to a representative from the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, there was an average delay of 30 minutes Saturday due to the weather. Tampa and other Florida airports are experiencing a high number of delays and cancellations due to a long band of thunderstorms to the north of us, says Tampa. The FAA has delayed program in effect for arriving and departing flights primarily due to weather and the high volume of flights today. So far, no active airport events in Florida have been reported. What? So far, no active airport events in Florida have been reported on the FAA's National Airspace Systems Status website. Here's the thing about the FAA, the Federal Aviation Agency. There's this weird conglomeration of federal agencies. Some of them, like the FCC, is designed to regulate and punish people who broadcast. The Federal Communications Commission, its entire purpose is to punish broadcasters, make it difficult to broadcast, restrict all sorts of wacky technical restrictions that no one understands except old Charlie, who's just been laid off. Old Charlie knew how all these regulations, but he's been fired. That's the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. If you go to the FCC website, you will see a button where you can click and file a complaint. Please file a complaint. They can't wait to accept complaints about TV and radio broadcasters. Can't wait. But if you go to the FAA website, you won't find a button that you can click to complain about your lost luggage, a button you can click to complain about endless flight delays, or worse, about that guy in front of you who puts his seat all the way back and then starts snoring, or that kid who has been crying since Tampa. And now you're almost in San Francisco, and that kid is still crying because there is not a special toddler section on the plane that is soundproofed and sealed. That's what should be. Because, you see, the purpose of the Federal Aviation Association is different than that of, say, for example, the SEC or FCC. The difference is this. Part of the mission of the Federal Aviation Association, whatever, is to promote airline travel. The FCC does not have a mission to promote radio and television consumption. The FAA, part of its mission, part of its charter, is to promote airline travel, which to me is an inherent conflict. If you have a complaint, well, they're really not the best place to go to, because their mission is public relations and a positive spin on everything that happens at the airport with JetBlue or Delta on a June Friday. One of the great myths, my friend, is that the busiest day at the airport is the day before Thanksgiving. And then what do? They send out the junior reporter from the local TV station to stand on the entrance ramp at the airport to report on the incredible volume of people going to the airport the day before Thanksgiving. But you look at this poor reporter standing on the ramp, and you see there's nobody behind her. There's nobody behind him. He's standing on the ramp, but there is no traffic at the airport. That's because it is not the busiest travel day of the year. The busiest travel day of the year is the second or third Friday in June, because there's that confluence. There's an SAT word. That confluence of business travelers coming home on a Friday and vacation travelers going out on a Friday. That is why it's the busiest day of the year. And then you throw in a thunderstorm, you're going to be there till Thanksgiving. Good evening. I'm Walter Sterling. Coming up in just seconds, I will share with you who has won so far at the Oscars, because who the heck wants to sit and watch that crap when we can drive the 18-wheeler, get in the four-wheeler, get away from the relatives, start the spring break. Many better things to do. But I'll tell you the results so you won't sound like an idiot tomorrow. Good evening. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by that Providence judge.
But a handicapped parking placard would allow you to park overnight.
Right.
Unless there's a storm.
All right. Good evening, Sterling on Sunday. Tonight is Oscar night. It's amazing to me that there are actually two movies for many awards that we've actually seen, Oppenheimer and Barbie. The rest of the movies, as usual, no one's ever heard of, don't care about, their tricks. Like, for example, Maestro, about Leonard Bernstein, which I saw on Netflix or whatever, which was great on television. But to get into the Oscar contention, you know what they did? I'm like, how did that movie only gross $7,000 or something? Well, the reason it only grossed $7,000 or something is because not a reflection of how good Maestro is. It is about Leonard Bernstein, starring Bradley Cooper, directed by Bradley Cooper, largely written by Bradley Cooper. But here's the deal. In order to qualify to get an Academy Award to be up for the Oscars, they only have to release it in one theatrical theater, only in one theater, only one movie theater. And that's what they did. It's a Netflix movie. That's how you saw it. That's how I saw it. One movie theater in Los Angeles qualifies it for Academy Awards. It only was shown in one actual movie theater. Let's see how the awards are going now. Are you ready? Oh, this is so exciting. We're driving a truck, and we get to have this. This is the power of radio. All right. Do-do-do-do-do. Actress in a supporting role, Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdouts. Was it The Holdout? Oh, Holdover, sorry. The Boy and the Heron, animated feature film, Boy and the Heron. Oppenheimer won cinematography. Poor Things, a movie you didn't see, won costume design. They haven't picked the director yet, haven't announced that. Documentary feature film, you haven't seen any of these. 20 Days in Mariupol, yeah, that. And then documentary short film, you didn't see it, The Last Repair Shop, that won. Film editing, Oppenheimer. International film, The Zone of Interest from the United Kingdom. Nah, you didn't see that. Makeup and hairstyling, Poor Things. Music, Oppenheimer. Original score, What Was I Made For? That was by Billie Eilish. And the thing about Billie Eilish and her brother is for the first time ever, she dressed in a normal outfit. She had a Chanel suit on. $7,600 outfit. She finally dressed for the part of being a big deal. Production design, Poor Things. Didn't see that. Okay. Sound, The Zone of Interest. The big ones, Best Actor, Best Director, Best Actress, Best Film, they haven't been announced yet. When they're announced, I'll let you know. It's 24 past the hour. It's very exciting to be with you. It's exciting to be part of the zombie apocalypse, the weather, the winter apocalypse, the horrible weather that we're supposed to be experiencing now. However, the best story, I got to find this audio for you, the best story is, 1 second, I'll find it. Hold on, what do you want from me? You want professionalism? Yeah, you know, listen to Mark Simone if you want professionalism. Listen to this story.
Imagine being stuck inside a storage container for days. Well, that was reality for a Cocoa woman who was locked in here. And police say she's lucky to be alive.
We spoke to family members. We went to known locations where she frequents. And there was nothing. So we had to list her as missing.
Cocoa police started looking for 52-year-old Marlene Lopez Wednesday.
Who called you? Who said she's missing?
Co-worker called us yesterday to do a well-being check because she failed to pick up her son.
Police didn't expect what they learned next.
24 hours later, and we get a call from somebody who heard banging on the door here.
Wow. Officers rushed to the scene.
They went to check and opened the door, and she came in. She'd been in there since Monday night. That's what we believe. She was a little dehydrated. We had to take her to the hospital to get checked out.
So what happened?
I don't know. I was in one place and I found in another.
Traffic here on US 1 near Michigan Avenue can be extremely noisy, especially during the day. That's when Lopez was banging on the doors, which could have been hard to hear at first.
She's been missing for 3 days, so something else is going on. There's something more to the story.
Tyler Sonnenberg owns this storage unit and says it's stocked with lawnmowers. Off camera, he told me he first saw her walking around the area on Monday. He remembers locking the unit Tuesday afternoon and says all day Wednesday he didn't hear any noise. He thinks she walked in herself, then passed out. He claims he saw a lighter and a pipe inside after she left.
There are two locks on the levers of this unit, so that means the doors cannot be pulled open now. But the owner says he's not at fault and that she shouldn't have been trespassing anyway. He's now considering pressing charges.
Pressing charges? A Florida mother. Let's review this. A Florida mother who was reported missing by a concerned coworker was found alive in a shipping container after someone heard her banging on the locked door. She was trapped in a shipping container located next to a business on Cocoa Boulevard. The Cocoa Police Department said she was last seen Monday at her home and was reported missing Wednesday after a concerned co-worker called the police. During the course of the investigations, detectives were notified that a woman had been found. She had been banging on the door of the shipping container when someone heard her and unlocked the door. The shipping container was filled with lawnmowers. She had been seen walking around the shipping container, and then nobody saw her again. This goes to the story that we revealed 3 weeks ago about the disappearance of a 200-foot radio tower. A 200-foot radio tower in Georgia just disappeared. Vanished. Nobody. Oh, or was it in New England? It doesn't matter. The story isn't about the disappearance of the radio tower, and the story isn't about a woman locking herself in a storage container. It's about their brains. In order to steal a 200-foot tower, at some point in the shower earlier that week, you're thinking, you know what I should do? I should get Frank, and the two of us should go and steal a radio tower. Let's go and get a radio tower and make it disappear like Houdini. And then to get Frank to do it with you is an amazing sales job. How does that sales job go? Hey, Frank, I'm glad you're there. I have an idea. There's a 200-foot radio tower about a half mile from us. Yeah, I've seen that every time I drive by. Every time I go to the 7-Eleven, I see that. Okay, well, what we're going to do is steal it. Well, what do we do then? We're going to steal it, and then we'll have a 200-foot tower. We can do anything we want. We could melt it down and sell it for scrap, or we could start a ham radio operation and broadcast our ideas to the whole world.
We can do that with the internet.
No, it's not the same thing. Much more exciting to have a ham radio reach other ham operators. And now we have Ms. Lopez in Florida near Michael Ewing's radio station in Sebring, Florida. Cocoa, Florida, not Cocoa Beach. No, no, no. Far more inland. not beach. This is just Cocoa. Walking around a container. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go into this storage container. Look at all of those beautiful lawnmowers. The unit was filled with lawnmowers. Look at all those beautiful lawnmowers. Let me just go in there and see if there's a lawnmower that maybe I'd like to hang out with. Would that be possible? That's the fascinating thing about the American brain. This is a live radio show, Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday. Inspired by George Gilbert.
Get delicious Lancaster brand sirloin, porterhouse, or rib steak for only 79 cents a pound at your Acme Market.
All right, do you realize that Oppenheimer won Best Picture? It's all done. You don't have to worry about missing anything. No FOMA. No FOMA about the Oscars. Dr. Dave, weather for the week.
Sterling on Sunday. Coming up,
Hudson Valley's favorite jingle joint has a hooker problem. Details later. Strippers on the loose, Sterling at night.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I rate the seven police commissioners I served under during my career with the New York City Police Department. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
Well, Walter Sterling, good evening. Now, let me tell you, I'm a Mac guy. And I've spent my, I actually bought in 1984 a Mac. I have a Mac Plus. And a Mac, now I did get the 512, I got the Plus. And that was plenty. And then, you know, you could spend a small fortune and get an external hard drive, which changed your life. But now I find myself having to deal with Google Sheets, which I hate. And I hate all Microsoft things, and I hate all PC things, because they never work. And they're very complicated. In order for me to know if anybody has called and who has called, I get to share a Google Sheet, which is stupid. And I must this week fix this and get the proper software allowing me to actually see the phones, which does exist because, you know, it's a great security risk what I've had to go through to get that. But here's the thing. Usually what happens is I get an email which says these are, you know, here's the Google Sheet. And then I open it up and there's the Google Sheet spreadsheet. And I hate that right away because I'm an English major. There's a spreadsheet. That's just what I want in the middle of my show, to show me people calling. This week, I go to click on it, and it wants me to sign in. It wants me to sign into my Google account. Well, I have no idea what my Google account sign in is. And that means that I have forgotten my password, which I will always forget. Because, you know, they always say, well, you know, be sure to do the security and change your password regularly. I change my passwords every day because I forget my passwords every day. Now, I could write them down in a little book, but that would be logical. That would take up logic space in my head. And I have so little RAM. There's so little RAM in my head because what? I'm in radio. This is a whole industry of C students who have no prom stories. Say to a radio person, hey, did you go to your prom? And the answer will be, no, I was at the transmitter that night. I was working at the transmitter that night. Or, no, I was visiting Big Joe, watching his show, learning about radio. I was hanging out at the station. Okay, nobody in radio knows any girls. No women know any guys. We have no sex lives. But it's this great illusion that millions of people are listening right now, and therefore we're very social. We are not very social at all. The most introverted group of people in the world, they have no social skills. The only reason why I got anywhere, not on the air, off the air, the only reason I got anywhere is I met John Malloy. Remember who John Malloy was? He wrote the book Dress for Success. Until he was shamed. He wrote an honest book about how to dress for work. It was so honest that after it was out for decades, somebody went, wait a minute, he makes some ethnic slurs in this book. He says that you have to be very careful if you're Hispanic. Oh, my gosh, he was canceled. Book canceled. He was canceled. But John Malloy was brilliant. Because I had him on my show years ago, and John said, you want to be successful? This is what you got to do. You have to watch the people who get off the airplane in first class. This is when people dressed for travel. You got to watch the people who get off the airplane in first class. Look for the ones in expensive and fancy restaurants. Look at how they dress. Look at the people who own your company, your CEO, on your board of directors. That's how you dress. What's that answer? Navy blue suit, white shirt, rep tie, black shoes. And for women, navy blue suit, white silk blouse, two pieces of simple gold jewelry, and be consistent. And I did that, and boom, I was the youngest executive vice president in the history of the National Broadcasting Company. Why? Because I had that suit. And what else did I wear? Oh, I had another suit like that, and maybe three. I think at the height of my powers, I had three suits, but they were all identical. And the CEO of NBC at the time, Fred Silverman, used to tease me constantly. He says, do you have just one suit, Walter? Is that it? But I knew I was right. I just looked at him in the eye, and I stuck to my guns, and I wore my navy blue suit. And people attributed knowledge and wisdom and success to me. But it was nonsense. I didn't know anything. I knew how to wear that suit. I knew how to buy that suit. And I also understood from an early age that I had a body built for Brooks Brothers. I knew that any deviation from Brooks Brothers would look stupid. I made the mistake once of going to a different clothing store, a really good clothing store, but it wasn't Brooks Brothers. The suit looked lousy on me. And I learned that a dark gray suit looks lousy on me. I need to wear a navy blue suit. That's all there is. That's why I was successful. Because of the book Dress for Success. And then he came out, John Molloy, M-O-L-L-O-Y, came out with another book called The Women's Dress for Success Book. And it was the same premise. Look at who's successful. How do they dress? Dress like that. Don't make it more complicated. Then I had him on a show, and he took phone calls. And the phone calls, a woman calls up, I'll never forget it. John, why do you say that men shouldn't wear a green suit? Our men in the army wear green suits. Yes, ma'am, and they need a gun to cash a check. Boom. It's brilliant. It was brilliant. And that's all it took. And wear a tie. When in doubt, dress better. Dress for the job you want. When you go for a job interview, I'm going to tell you, I've hired hundreds of people. And the two biggest mistakes they can make are these. Because once you get the job interview, your competence is kind of assumed. You've gone through many barriers to get into the job interview. Wait, you're trying to get a job? I'm going to tell you the two things you need to know that'll be useful to you. Number one, pay attention at wherever you want to work to how they dress. Because the first thing that an interviewer is going to assess is, will you fit in? They assume your skills. Will you fit in? Well, how will they know? By how you dress. Study how the people at the business you want to work at dress. Dress like that. But this is the one that kills more people from getting a job. Whoever is interviewing you has invested 1, 10, 20 years at that company. That company is their life. They know that company. It's important when you go for a job interview to know the company. Read everything you can about the company, every article you can find about the company, every latest piece of progress, every latest event. Know the company. Not because it's a skill test or a memory test of what you know. It's because the person you're talking to has an enormous ego about the company. They're your gatekeeper. Therefore, they must know a lot about the company, much more about the company than about the job you want to get or about you. They don't care about you. They want to hear the flattering knowledge of the company. Make sure you know everything about the company that is public that you can possibly know. That's the real test. That's how you get the job. I can't tell you how many people I've interviewed who don't really seem to know where they are or what the company makes or what they do. And don't question anything about any decision of the company. Every decision that company has made is brilliant and fine until you get the job, and then you can be a jerk and criticize all you want. But until you get the job, you just go, this is fantastic. I'm so honored to be here. That's what you do. That's what you do. Then I asked a big shot recruiter at Spencer Stewart, one of those executive headhunting firms, when he retired, when Tony Thompson was retiring. I said to Tony, what's the biggest mistake that people make in the process of getting a job? What is the biggest mistake they make? And I was shocked at his answer. I was really shocked. He said they lie about their education. I'm like, they lie about their education? That's the dumbest thing to lie about, because it isn't just easy to check. At every university in America, there's an entire building dedicated to keeping track of who graduated and what their major was in the year that they graduated. It's called the registrar's office. Usually its own building. That's how important it is. That is their integrity, is the track record and the future of their graduates. That is their whole value. Their value is a degree. And therefore, they make sure they're right about who has a degree. That's their value. And I was amazed. He said, people lie about their education. They lie if they went to college. They lie about when they graduated. And like in a fever, when he told me that, I called Syracuse University, from which I graduated. And I said to my buddy there, I said, would you just check with the registrar and tell me what it says? Because I wanted to make darn sure that I had it exactly word for word as to what Syracuse would say about my graduation. All right, I want to talk to you about the horror show that I've been going through with my 11-year-old to get her through fifth grade. It should not be this difficult. Your advice will be welcome. Oh, but to conclude about my Google spreadsheet, right now, in order for me to see if anybody's calling or what they're calling about, I can't. I have to re-register for Google Sheets, which is the worst program in the world. It's a PC program. I'm not a PC brain. I barely have a Mac brain, but I hate all of the above. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Neil Rogers.
Yeah, that's right. I qualify. I'm a fag. That gives me a leg up, so to speak.
No, you can't. There's no fags in the church.
There's, oh my God. Wait a minute. I want you to get, do we have a bullet? I wish we had a bulletin sounder. There's no fags in the Catholic Church?
No.
Okay. Thank you so much. I'm so relieved. I feel so much better now.
Well, I have been trying to sign on to Google Sheets, and I lost my password. I always lose my password. And I said, okay. They said, we'll send you a secret code to your email. And I'm like, no, you won't. And that was a minute ago, and they never sent a secret code for me to reset my password. It never happens. I'll get it in a half hour. It never instantly happens the way it does for normal people. I never get these secret codes. We'll send it to you by message. We'll send you a text. We'll send you an email. This never happens for me, and that's why I need a vacation. Did you hear about this? You and I finally get the bucket list trip that we have been waiting forever. You and I are going to the French Riviera. Yes, in October, for 9 nights, we're going to the French Riviera. It is a special small batch vacation for midnight misfits. That's you. Introverts, that's me. Can't speak for you, because that would be extroverted. But I am an introvert. I derive energy from being alone. Alone. And I can't wait to go to the French Riviera in October with you. Colette Travel heard me talk about the French Riviera, got in touch with us and said, we can put together a trip for you and other misfits that'll be just perfect for introverts and misfits. Here's the trip. In October, for 9 nights, we go, you and I, us, go to the French Riviera. We start in Nice. We visit Saint-Tropez, Cannes, Monaco, where I got engaged to my current wife.
I'm your only wife.
Yeah, my only wife. Monaco. That's right, the casino at Monte Cristo, the casino at Monaco, which is incredible. Forget about Vegas and Atlantic City and Queens. Do you know the busiest casino in America is in Queens? Well, you and I are going to the French Riviera in October, where the weather is mild and beautiful. We get to go to the beach, wineries, perfume factories. We see incredible acre after acre of French flowers. We see how the perfume is made. We see how the wine is harvested and created. We sample it, we taste it, and we have night after night after night of actual French cooking, French meals, where in France, and you and I get to do it. I want to go on vacation with you. I need a vacation. How about you? You and I do so much for other people. We make sure that the kids are all right, the relatives are all right. We take care of our mother, our father. We do what we have to do. It's time to get the prize. And the prize is a trip to the French Riviera in October, arranged by the world-class experienced, seasoned travel company, Colette Travel. Colette Travel. Here's how you get the information to join me and my wife, Katie, who's Irish, and therefore it'll be the first good meal I've had in 22 years. Because, you know, my wife's idea of a great dinner is to make reservations. Go to WalterSterlingShow.com, WalterSterlingShow.com. Right at the top of the homepage, you'll see a beautiful panoramic view of the beach in Nice. Click on it, and there you will be able to get the information. Sign up for the information. No further obligation. Get the facts. Or send me an email, a personal email, with your real address. Send that to me to Walter M. Sterling at Gmail. Walter M. Sterling at Gmail. Walter M. Sterling at Gmail. You send that to me, and I will send you a brochure about our special trip with Colette Travel. Walter M. Sterling at Gmail. Send that to me with your real mailing address, and I will personally send you the brochure. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Who was this man? What was it? Others looked at radio and saw a gadget.
Walter M. Sterling
looked at radio and saw a household possession capable of enriching the lives of millions.
So dreary to see a major story covered by an incredibly average reporter. I want to know the story from the point of view of a person who lives there. And that's why you and I are going to talk to a bus driver who lives and works in Tel Aviv. That's coming up in just seconds. This entire hour is dedicated to Gary Chapman. Gary Chapman, the headline performer at KMOX St. Louis. Now, Dr. Dave.
Sterling on Sunday. Coming up.
Hudson Valley's favorite jingle joint has a hooker problem. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling at night.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I rate the seven police commissioners I served under during my career with the New York City Police Department. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
The CBS Radio Workshop.
Lesbians in space. Who wears sports bra?
I'm attracted to you, Camille. It's okay. We're not animals. We don't always have to act on our attractions. I mean, what would we do as friends? Like Thelma and Louise, but without the guns.
The CBS Radio Workshop.
Lesbians in space. Alien life with benefits.
For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker. Welcome to part two of Florida Story.
We're going to go down to Miami, where I hate to blame Florida for this just because this happened on a boat that is docked in one of their ports. But we had a toilet cam man on a cruise ship in Florida. What?
Now at 11, suspected voyeur at sea, a Royal Caribbean employee arrested for allegedly installing hidden cameras in guest bathrooms and recording them.
Now, the toilet cam man phenomenon is not new. It's rare, but you hear these stories from time to time. This has got to be the bottom of the barrel of the toilet cam man world, though, because when you put your hidden camera in the bathroom to catch people doing things, is there a worst bathroom? Is there a more confined, more awkward, not any good angles bathroom than have you ever been on a cruise ship? Worst bathroom experience of your life. It's like your whole existence is sort of like a porta potty, except like the shower in a cruise ship bathroom, the normal ones that I've been in, is smaller than a phone booth. It's ridiculously bad. So he's not getting any good angles. He's not getting any good material here. And I bet you even among the subgenre of this tiny little substrate of society that is the toilet cam man community, I bet you he's at the bottom of that pecking order. And that's where Sylvester Stallone just moved to. That's how bad California is. He's going to the place where a strip club patron can get battered across the face with a stack of cash. There could be a toilet cam in the nearest bathroom. But hey, the taxes are great, and I don't have to have an armed guard to go get stuff unlocked for me at the drugstore.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
This concludes today's episodes of Florida Stories. Subscribe to the Florida Stories podcast and get past episodes at waltersterlingshow.com. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Right, our entire hour is made possible by Gary Chapman. Gary Chapman, who's an expert in wide orbit. Two dirty words among official producer control board operators. Attention, control board operators in America. Stop calling yourselves a board op. And don't on any of the online job sites, don't say you were a board op. No one knows what a board op is. It sounds like you are not interested in being an op. You're bored. No, you are a highly skilled technician. You are a broadcast technician. Okay, now I get a better picture. I am a broadcast technician responsible for what goes on the air. Well, doesn't that sound a lot better? Yeah, I'm a board op, you know. I work at a board op because, No. You call yourself a broadcast technician or a... What do they call it in TV? They call it a day-of-air producer. That's what they are in TV. They're day-of-air producers. They're executive line producers in movies, day-of-air producer for television shows. You're a day-of-air producer in radio. Don't call yourself a board op. It's stupid. No one knows what it is. That's the big problem. Only call yourself something that anybody can immediately understand. I hope I've helped your career there, Gary. Gary Chapman... Brilliant broadcast technician at the giant KMOX in St. Louis. We are on many radio stations that are either Class C FMs like KMBZ FM in Kansas City, 98.1, or 50,000-watt clear channel stations, of which there are only 27 in America. There were 28 when it started, but one of them disappeared in New York, oddly. And a 50,000-watt station that is a clear channel station means that there's no one else on their channel. There's no one else at 1210 WPHT. There isn't another 1210 in America. This is a clear channel station. Same thing with KMOX. And the great KDKA, run by the brilliant Dave Labrosi, who is, you're retiring, Dave? Why would you do that? Why would you make my life hell? Now I'm going to have to kiss up to a whole new program director at KDKA. I'm going to have to pretend to be interested in their career. They're going to say, gee, I know that you invented New Jersey 101.5. Like that was it? No, believe me, that was an incidental moment in the career. How about the fact that I consulted all of the RKO stations longer than Bill Drake? How about that? When I started consulting the RKO radio stations, which in the 80s, 70s and 80s was like the chain. That was like the chain of radio stations. When I started, it wasn't making any money, which was shocking to me at the time. And when I left, it was making a profit of over $20 million, thanks to the brilliant Jerry Lyman and Shane O'Neill, who left me alone. The other person we're dedicating this hour to, I'm going to ask you to share this, Gary, is with John Roman. John Roman. John Roman wrote me this brilliant email. You ready? Listen to this. Walter, you stupid S. The Art Bill archives are on Coast to Coast AM, the biggest overnight radio show on the air. Makes your puny three-hour once-a-week show a true joke. Good example is your really dumb Lesbians in Space bit that you constantly do. What are you, 13 years old and just discovered girls? Yes, I am 13 years old and just discovered girls. Wake up. I only listen occasionally to see if you still do this stupid stuff like I just discussed. For grammar alone, he deserves a prize. I didn't even go into the typos. I love it when people say, well, I just listened to see if you're still terrible. Okay, well, there are at least 50 stations on the dial and 4,000 cable things, and you want to check in my show to see if it's still terrible? Thank you. I appreciate it. All right, the name of the show is Sterling on Sunday. It's a beautiful night in some parts of Florida and California. The rest of the country is kind of crappy, and I love being with you. Now, I can't stand it when I see a stand-up reporter, a standard-issue network reporter at the scene of some event. I want to see the event. When there's bad weather, hurricane, tornado, blizzard, I want to see the hurricane, tornado, blizzard weather. I don't want to see the reporter in the center of the shot with a lower third chyron graphic explaining who he is. I want to see the gas station being torn down, the trees being taken out, the flooding of the cars floating down the road. That's, I don't want to see the reporter. But the same thing is true, for example, when the war in Ukraine started. It was the same as if they were covering a hurricane. Instead of seeing the bombs going off and buildings collapsing and children running through the streets of Ukraine, what did we see? We saw a standard issue reporter standing in the middle of the shot explaining what he could have done in a press release. We didn't need the TV. There was no advantage to TV being there based on the way they shot it. Same thing in Israel. The horror of what happened on October 7th in Israel. Every time I see a shot, I see an official network reporter doing official network things. I have not seen one TV shot or heard one radio report of somebody who lives in Israel. What is the impact on them going to work, knowing that they have friends and relatives a few miles away who might be captured or killed? What is that like? I have not heard one Israeli citizen interviewed. That is something you and I are going to take care of in just seconds. You and I are going to talk to Duv. Duv is a bus driver, a public bus driver in Tel Aviv. Let's hear what Duv has to say coming up in just seconds. This is Sterling on Sunday. For years, I have enjoyed the MyPillow mattress.
Sterling on Sunday. Inspired by Mark Simone.
I'm sure they love their country, but they don't like their country. They don't like Friday night football. They don't like hot dogs. They don't like the 4th of July. It's the worst day of the year for them.
Coming up, you and I are going to talk to Dove, who is a public bus driver in Tel Aviv. And we're getting ready to line that up to get it for you. He's in Tel Aviv. I suspect what he has to say about the war is different than the official spokespeople. The reason that you and I have general mistrust and dislike of the news and the official media sources isn't because of, you know, the mainstream media or what some horse's butt news person or talk show host has said about it. We don't care about that. Tell me if this hasn't happened to you. In life, every now and then, you have actually witnessed an event. It could have just been your sister's wedding, could have been a fire down the street, a bad auto accident on the interstate. You actually saw what happened. And then the next day, in the newspaper or on TV or even on the radio, you saw how it was covered. And you're like, wait a minute, I was there. That isn't what happened. That's where our general mistrust of reporting happens. It isn't because of misinformation from the, you know, the Biden camp or the Trump camp. That isn't how it happens. It happens because of life experience where you and I have actually been at an event, seen what happens, and then we see it reported. We're like, that's not what I saw. That's not what I heard. Worse is if it's an event that you created. Maybe it was a press event. Maybe you had a school board meeting, a teacher that was in trouble. You were in an auto accident. And then the next day you saw it covered and you're like, that isn't what happened. And that's where the mistrust started. And it might have happened when you were in high school or in college, but it was always a little, gee, you know, that I saw it and that isn't what happened. That's why coming up, you and I are going to have a conversation with a Tel Aviv bus driver, not an official reporter, not a Columbia journalism graduate, someone who's very earnest about journalism. No, we're going to talk to a bus driver. And all day, what does he do? He does bus driver things, talks to citizens of Tel Aviv, listens to their stories about friends and relatives who may have been personally affected by the horrible events on the border of their country. And I'm going to ask him some things. I'm going to say to him, listen, one of the things you and I always hear about the horror show in Israel is that, well, there's another side. Like, what? Hello? What happened? What happened was that on October 7th, in a suburb in Israel, where people like you and me were feeding their babies, their toddlers, they were getting ready for work, and it was a high holy day in the Jewish calendar. They were getting ready to worship. They were in prayer. And then hooded animals showed up at their suburban home windows, broke the windows with the butt of their guns, reached in, grabbed children and babies, kidnapped some of them, or some of them they just beheaded in front of their mother and father. What other side is there? Well, you know, there's another side to this. I'm like, really? That's what you and I are going to ask the bus driver in Tel Aviv. And that conversation will be coming up in just seconds. Then, in a completely different subject, this week was the International Year of the International Day of Women, right? International Day of Women. And it was about celebrating women's accomplishments. And again, I always am stumped by this, because where I grew up, it was a matriarchy. And when I started going to work out of college, out of high school, in high school, it was a matriarchy. My first boss, second boss, third boss were women. These businesses were run by women. It was transparent to me. It was invisible to me. That's how businesses run. But more importantly, as a child, growing up in New Jersey is a matriarchy. Carmela Soprano in The Sopranos, his wife, that's how all the moms are in New Jersey. All of them. In some degree, that's what they're like, right? Right? That's what they're like. Whenever there was trouble in my home as a child, here's how it went. Mom would get on the phone with other moms, and they would start talking about how to solve the problem, because each mom in New Jersey, maybe it was like this with you in Sacramento, but each mom in New Jersey, they had at least one secret power. They either knew the Monsignor, a rabbi, the principal, the superintendent of the school, the police chief, or the most powerful person in New Jersey, the produce manager at ShopRite. Each of them had a contact where they could solve the problem. And if they all got together on the phone or met for 10 minutes, problems would be solved. And what would their husbands be doing during this? They would be doing nothing. Because the moms would point to their husbands and say, George, just sit in the corner and read the Star Ledger. Just sit over there. Let us handle it. Because she knew that if the husband got involved, everything would get worse. Let us handle it. That's the world in which I grew up. Mom was in charge. This has been true the rest of my life. I have three daughters. Who's in charge? The three daughters. And if they need to break a tie, who do they go to? Me? No. They go to mom. Mom breaks the tie. Who wins? Mom always wins. Isn't this my house? Yeah, well, it's my house too. What? Well, it's also my house. What? No, I don't really think we should cover every wall with pictures. What? This is my house. Okay, sorry. And then if there's a need for an extra vote, if it needs to go to the Senate, it goes to my wife's sister. because it has been my experience that every marriage is controlled by the sister-in-law, either side, but the sister-in-law decides. That hideous coffee table that your sister-in-law got that you can't stand, I promise you, within 6 months, that is going to be in your home, guaranteed. Coming up, you and I are going to talk to Dove, who is a bus driver in Tel Aviv in Israel, and we're going to get the actual perspective of a person who lives in Israel.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Alex Daddario.
Do you just look at my boobs?
I was not my intention. I didn't stare directly at them.
You look at them right now.
Now I did, because you were talking about them.
Coming up, you and I are going to have a real-world conversation with a bus driver in Tel Aviv, Israel, and get his perspective on the horror show taking place right now. Coming up, Dr. Dave and your weather.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Hudson Valley's favorite jingle joint has a hooker problem. Details later. Strippers on the loose, Sterling at night.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I rate the 7 police commissioners I served under during my career with the New York City Police Department. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
I have always found it a waste of time to see a stand-up reporter standing in the middle of a story and dominating the TV screen. Why? Why would I have to watch that person, the same person who'd be doing a tornado, a hurricane, an explosion, a train wreck? I want to see the train wreck. I want to hear the reaction of the people who live there and are experiencing it. And that is why I have been pursuing an actual citizen of Israel, a person who lives and works in Israel, to understand what is taking place in Israel, not from an official spokesman, not from an NBC, CNBC, Fox News consultant, reporter. No, no, I want to hear from somebody who lives in Israel, and that's who you and I are going to talk to. You and I are going to talk to Duv, who is a bus driver in Tel Aviv. Welcome, Duv. Duv is a bus driver in Tel Aviv in Israel. He drives hundreds, thousands of people a week to where they want to go, to work, to school, to their friends. He's in touch with the population of Israel in a profound way, much better than some serious official reporter or spokesperson. I trust Dove. On October 7th of last year, when you were going to work, when you were driving, when you were talking to your neighbors, and you heard that your friends and neighbors just a few miles away were being slaughtered, how did you feel?
I wasn't on my way to work. I was praying on a holiday called the Simchat Torah, which is a very big Jewish holiday, commencing the finishing of reading of the whole Torah every year and starting it fresh. So that day we heard sirens in the morning. In Ramat HaSharon, which is just north of Tel Aviv. We didn't know what was going on. One of my neighbors said there's something going on down south. We didn't hear much. It's pretty much a day like Shabbat where a lot of us were disconnected from the media or from television. More information came at the end of the holiday at sundown, and obviously the days that went by, and as we heard more, we were more upset and more hurt, I would say. A little bit of upset feeling with our government, whose responsibility was to protect us, and they failed. And obviously anger at the people that carried out the attacks.
Hamas attacked you on a high Jewish holy day? Is that what you told me?
On a high Jewish holiday and on Shabbat. Similar to what happened back in the Yom Kippur War, where Israel was attacked from all the sides on the highest of holidays.
The atrocities that we've heard about rapes, beheading of babies, beheading of mothers in front of their children. Is this true?
It's very true. I've seen pictures. I know people that that were involved in taking the bodies off of the grounds and bringing them to a place where they can identify.
Well, Dove, you mentioned that friends and neighbors removed bodies from the ground. One body is obviously too many. In the initial attacks,
of course.
Did you hear about how many people were slaughtered? Did you get a sense of how many neighbors were murdered?
Neighbors, I wouldn't say neighbors. It's people who were slaughtered and murdered were, I would say, about 2 or 3 hour drive from where I live. The numbers, they're very hard to comprehend here. You know, they're talking in the around 1,000, I think more.
Thousands.
They were slaughtered from what I remember.
Thousands. Dev, let me ask you this. Do you feel today that the United States of America and allies are doing enough to fight off the attacks on your country?
I think that the government, the United States government, Joe Biden, and with all due respect, I think that he's not providing us with enough support. In the beginning of the war, we heard we were getting very strong words from him and some sort of feeling of commitment. But every push by the United States to get Israel to stop the war, I think, is a movement backwards and putting Israel in danger.
I don't understand when Americans say there's another side to this story, and we see thousands of people protesting and supporting the other side. I'm like, wait a minute. If somebody comes to my home in a black mask, breaks the window, grabs my baby, and beheads my baby, I don't know what other side there is. From my perspective, there is no other side, but it is your perspective that matters. It's yours that matters. How do you feel about that?
I'll tell you this much. Let's ask the American population a different question. Imagine a group of people from Mexico, including citizens of Mexico, illegally crossing the border into Texas, and within a matter of a few hours, beheading babies, raping women, and carrying out all sorts of attacks on U.S. citizens. How would the citizens of the U.S. feel? Oh, in an unprovoked.
You, your friends, your passengers, what is your point of view about President Trump?
What is our point of view of President Trump? We felt a lot more support from President Trump when he was president. There seemed to be a lot more talking between President Trump and Bibi Netanyahu. In essence, our view on President Trump is very positive. There was a lot more support from Trump on the Israeli government. A lot more where there was a mutual bonding and a mutual acceptance between Bibi and Trump.
Trump, when asked about this war, says, "If I had been president, this would have never happened." Do you think that's true?
If he was president, I wouldn't say that this would have never happened, because altogether the failure to protect the border with Gaza was Israel's responsibility, and Israel failed. But I do feel that there would be a lot more support from the U.S. government if Trump was president.
Dove, do you have a final message for Americans?
I'll tell you this much. As a citizen of Israel, there's a lot of Jews, there's a lot of Muslims, a lot of Christians here in Israel. The Arab population is among us. It's around us. The sense of security, it's scary a little bit. You have Ramadan coming up right now, starting next week. A lot of bus drivers that I work with, they're also Arab Israelis, and you don't know where to expect the next attack from. It could be a bus driver running over people. It could be a truck driver running over. It could be just like we saw down south, the Arabs from Gaza, Palestinians, that were on a work visa in the bordering towns, doing all sorts of odd jobs, construction jobs. Took down notes and helped carry out these attacks as well.
Dove, thank you very much for your words today and your feelings and your thoughts. Prayers go to the people who are hostages in those tunnels, which is an unbelievable horror. I can't imagine the horror of having a 10-year-old daughter taken from my home and put in a tunnel with people she doesn't know, in darkness, underfed, and needing mommy and daddy. I can't imagine a greater horror, Dove.
Me, I don't want to imagine a greater horror.
No. All right, thank you very much for your time today. You're a good friend. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Take care.
A bus driver in Tel Aviv answering questions on Sterling on Sunday. I'm going to play that again in 1 hour. In 1 hour, we'll play it again, and it's available on the website tomorrow, waltersterlingshow.com. Click listen to show, waltersterlingshow.com. We will post the today's show again. You can listen to the show and hear that interview again with Duv, who is a bus driver in Tel Aviv in Israel. What a horror. Just what a horror. All right, good evening. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday. Inspired by pilot error.
Keep us out over the lake south of the city for now at 3,000 feet. But I'm not sure we're going to maintain 3,000 very easy.
Celebrating Gary Chapman, who is a Day of Air producer at KMOX in St. Louis. Gary Chapman, fighting against wide orbit to maintain his very important position at KMOX. Coming up, Dave Scott will share with us a conversation about far out space adventures and the pyramids and how they were built and how they were not built, and about the Black Knight in space. There's so much to do tonight. It's such a horror what's taking place in Israel. It is such a horror because things seem to be, like, ignored and not understood. For example, there's a lot of talk about the need to protect Palestine and to protect the interests of Palestine. I'm like, wait a minute, Palestine's not a country. Did you know that? There is no such thing as a country called Palestine. And the need for humanitarian aid to get through to the Gaza Strip during the war. Well, no, that population is always supported by foreign aid. It's always been supported by handouts. This is nothing new. There's no new need for humanitarian aid. That's how that part of the world is fed. It's from humanitarian aid. But I have always been annoyed at the lack of creativity in terms of coverage of these events. When you and I see a hurricane on TV, what are we going to see? We're going to see a junior reporter in the middle of the street, in the rain, trying to not be blown away, as though somehow that is coverage of the hurricane. It's coverage of an idiot trying not to be blown away. Instead, what do I want to see? I want to see the trees being pulled out, the Sunoco sign flying through the air, smashing into the hotel, breaking the windows. That's what I want to see. Instead, I see the junior reporter with Mike Flag, trying not to get blown into the inland waterway. That's not coverage of a hurricane. That's coverage of an idiot. When Ukraine war broke out, it was the same thing. We would see the official network reporter trying to get credit for covering a war, jumping ahead in their promotion in the news person chain. Oh, you covered a war. Well, you must be a very important reporter. We're going to support you and support your career. You covered a war. But they didn't cover a war. They stood on the balcony of their hotel room in a war zone. And way over there, 150 miles away, we could see the bombs going off. What did Sterling on Sunday do? What did this show do? You and I got in touch with a citizen of Ukraine who happened to be a 28-year-old bank worker, guy going to work at a bank. And we talked to him about what life was like now in Ukraine. And he explained that he could not leave. The reason he couldn't leave was because his two parents were both physically handicapped and could not travel. And to be a son, he stayed there with his parents. But then we heard bombs going off right behind him, not 150 miles away. It was right behind him. We heard the bombs going off. That's what radio is supposed to do. And then he said, don't let anyone tell you in Ukraine that it is a police action. Every night from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m., he said, it is nonstop aerial bombardment of Ukraine, nonstop from Russia. In Ukraine, there is no other side. There's no other side. They didn't start the war. They didn't start the attack. Whoever is subject to the attack, that's the side. There is no, the person blowing them up, that we don't have to cover their point of view. There is no point of view. If unprovoked, you came and killed my kid. There is no other point of view. Therefore, I'm very glad that Duv, a Israeli Tel Aviv bus driver, shared with us tonight on Sterling on Sunday and shared his point of view and shared the story of living in Tel Aviv and Israel. I will play that again at 12:30 Eastern, 9:30 Pacific. We'll play that interview again. And then you can hear it anytime you want at Walter Sterling Show. WalterSterlingShow.com. You just click the little tab at the top that says listen to show, and every show we have ever done, every piece of art that we have ever committed on Sunday nights is available for you, including the secret shows that we did on WABC. Oh, radio people. What'd he say? He was on WABC? Yes, for months and months and months. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You know, when they ended that deal, which was okay, they said, well, you know, this was really good. We appreciate it. We want to expand this show to this, and we want to do more music on Saturday nights. I'm like, no, you don't have to explain. It's okay. I don't mind being dismissed from WABC, because the point is that I was on WABC. I was on WABC, and that's a good day. There's no downside to that. And today I'm on WPHT in Philadelphia, KMOX in St. Louis, KMBZ 98.1 FM, KFBK in Sacramento, and coming up, you and I are going to talk to Kendall Toby. Kendall is quite the character. She has incredibly large breasts. She's moved and lives in Las Vegas and has reports from the streets of Las Vegas, where we're on KXNT.
Who was this man? What was he? Others looked at radio and saw a gadget.
Walter M. Sterling
looked at radio and saw a household possession capable of enriching the lives of millions.
Oh my gosh, it's Sterling on Sunday. Coming up, Dave Scott with an official report about all things UFO. Plus, Kendall Toby from Las Vegas. This means that for a whole hour, you and I misfits, you and I midnight misfits, we pretty much just get to sit back and do nothing. Dr. Dave Iser with
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Hudson Valley's favorite jingle joint has a hooker problem. Details later. Strippers on the loose, Sterling at night.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I rate the 7 police commissioners I served under during my career with the New York City Police Department. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
The CBS Radio Workshop.
Lesbians in space. Who wears sports bras?
So, what did you want to talk about?
Unexpected joy. I wasn't expecting this.
Me neither.
You were a great fake girlfriend.
No, we were great fake girlfriends.
I hate goodbyes.
Well, this isn't a goodbye, is it?
The CBS Radio Workshop.
Lesbians in space. Alien life with benefits.
Dave Scott, who's an expert on all things extraterrestrial and strange phenomena on Earth. Dave, do you have something that you would like to share and report to us tonight, or should I ask you a question?
I actually have a major report for you, Walt.
Go ahead, sir.
The Arrow program, which was set up by the Pentagon, released its report, its final report, under Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick, who we've talked about on this show. Kirkpatrick came out and said, to the dismay of the world, that there are no UFOs, there are no aliens on Earth, and there are no lesbians in space. He is absolutely breaking the heart of the UFO community, and even members of his own UFO world, especially the whistleblowers and people who have come out saying that they've had encounters with unidentified aerial phenomena.
How do you feel about this revelation? Do you feel he was pressured at gunpoint to lie, or do you believe he's telling the truth?
I think that he is not lying, but I think he is also covering up the truth. This is much like the Condon Report, which came out a number of decades ago after Project Blue Book, where J. Allen Hynek had done research, came in as a skeptic, and then left as a believer that the phenomena was real, and the Condon Report came out and said that this was all bogus. That's where we got the term swamp gas, if you remember. Mm-hmm. And from there, this is almost identical. Everybody in the UFO community is calling this the Condon Report 2.0.
Are you sad?
I'm upset. I'm not sad. I'm upset because too many people, whether they're government officials, military officials, or even citizens who've had close encounters of the third kind, are sitting here saying, what I saw was real. What I saw was not from the U.S. government. Now, one of the things Arrow is saying is that the technology people are seeing is actually man-made, maybe some of it even secretive.
Well, I believe that some of it is man-made and some of it is secretive, but there's too much. And when you have people like astronaut Gordon Cooper and you have Buzz Aldrin saying, no, there was something there, and then they didn't talk about it anymore, and then they switched to the medical channel, and then they switched to the secret channel, there's something there.
There is something there. However, I think the U.S. government, led by the Pentagon spokesperson Susan Goff, wants this swept under the carpet because the military-industrial complex, Walt, they want all the toys. They want to have all the fun. They don't want people like you and I and your listeners knowing that there is something out there, that we are not alone in this universe.
Well, the reason that they don't want us to know is because the minute there is proof that there's something bigger than us out there, our government is diminished. The power of our government, the power of our law enforcement is diminished. The minute you say, oh, by the way, there's something with far superior technology and intelligence right by us. And you go, really? I'm going to listen to them from now on rather than you guys.
And that's a big part. But I also think it goes a little bit further. If we do have crash retrievals and alien bodies, okay, that allows for us to do a lot of science in the background to try and get ahead in the weapons field, okay? Because in the end, it is about weapons. It is about using it, whether it's anti-gravity or any type of zero-G gravity or propulsion systems. I think they want it for themselves. They don't want to share it for the benefit of humanity.
I like one of the theories, which is that visitors from another dimension, another time, another world, are visiting us, and they have superior technology for transportation and propulsion and for conquering gravity. But it never occurred to another civilization to create weapons that could kill each other. It's possible that they don't have any weapons. They can get around, but we have the weapons, and they are puzzled by the notion that it's okay for us to kill each other. Is that a possible theory?
Well, I think we are the greatest reality TV show in the universe. If they're staring down at us, they probably are enjoying what they are seeing, because it's all sex, drugs, and rock and roll, right? Throw in the odd war every now and again, and makes for good entertainment. But I think with this, when it comes to the technologies that these craft are getting and that they are trying to re-engineer. I think that the government wants it for themselves. They want to sweep this UFO topic back under the carpet where it belongs in their eyes. And basically, the rest of us can just pound sand. And I think that's their attitude.
Mr. Scott, how do I get in touch with you during the week?
SpacedOutRadio.com, Walt.
SpacedOutRadio.com. Are you like the best guest on our show ever? I think you are, Dave.
I love it. And I'll be here next week as well.
I am grateful. Thank you very much for being on Sterling on Sunday. Good evening. I'm Walter M. Sterling. It's a live radio show coast to coast. Yes, that's why we have live weather. We have amazing interviews with people like Dave Scott. And coming up, you and I are going to talk to Kendall Toby, who is a refugee from California, lived in California almost all of her life, moved to Las Vegas for reasons that remain a mystery. And she will share her adventures with us in seconds. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Judge Judy.
The three of you tried to be roommates. It didn't work out. And now you're bothering us.
You're right, Your Honor.
You're right. I know I'm right. So let's deal with this quickly and expeditiously because it's sushi day today.
His family has the death certificate and ashes to prove it. One problem. Tyler didn't know until he applied for benefits and everything checked out at the application until they asked for ID. Then they broke the news.
Right here it says you are dead.
I mean, what do you say to that? Tyler was living in a recovery center when someone stole his wallet. His ID was found on a person who had died.
So they find a paper ID of me that's smudged and everything.
The body was identified as Tyler, and the remains were sent to his family. Tyler lost contact with his family, and he didn't know they thought he was dead. But they had him up on the mantle, or so they thought. The medical examiner admitted the mistake. Tyler is relieved to be alive again, and the urn... yeah, you might want to return that. But keep the death certificate as a remembrance. Alan First, News 98.1, KMBZ.
That's what happened to me. My bank, Chase, J.P. Morgan Chase, decided I was dead. And they stopped my debit card from working because they thought I was dead. And then, Kendall Toby, when I went into the branch to say, by the way, I'm here, I'm not dead, rather than going, oh, gee, Mr. Sterling, that's terrible. Let me hit some keystrokes in the computer and fix this. They said, well, we can't do anything. You have to make a call. I have to do what? I'm standing here. You're executives at the bank. You can't just tell your computer that I'm not dead. No, you have to call. And it was a Saturday. Here, call this number. I'm like, it's not going to work on a Saturday. This is a bank. And sure enough, it didn't work. Call on Monday. I spent 3 hours on the phone proving to Chase that I wasn't dead.
Ew.
And it gets worse. I had to talk to three different people in the, ready, estate department. In the estate department to prove that I wasn't dead. And I was starting to get mail from Chase addressed to the estate of Walter Sterling. My mail was coming to the estate of Walter Sterling. And then I started getting emails saying that we have a report that you've passed away. If this isn't true, please call us immediately. I'm like, if I've passed away, I'm not going to call you immediately or any other time. This was the genius I had to deal with the banks. And as a result, of course, I'm no longer banking with Chase, but it's unbelievable. Oh, there's Gary Chapman. Gary Chapman is the day of air producer at KMOX. Remember when you used to do that at KFBK, Kendall?
Yes.
And allegedly you were the best at it, like the best there ever was.
Oh, thank you.
It's a radio fact. Now, you live in Las Vegas now. I have to ask the mundane question first. What's the temperature?
It's not too bad. It's like 65 right now or so. It's not too bad.
That's nice desert weather. Do you have any questions for me, Kendall? Anything I can clear up for you?
I do. You know, Walt, my deepest condolences.
Yeah, I'm sorry to announce my death. Yeah, go ahead.
I was wondering, you know, and fabulous guests. Your last guest, wow, this show has been amazing tonight. I love your last guest and your conversation with Duve. I can't wait to hear it again coming up. I was wondering, Walter, you're always asking the questions, but I want to ask a couple questions here so that listeners, we can get to know you a little bit better. So earlier you were talking about that Dress for Success book by John Malloy. And I was wondering, when you did get into radio, how did you get into radio? About how old were you? And like, how did you get into it? What inspired you?
Well, Kendall Toby, everybody on the air in the radio and most people in radio got to work in radio from the same pathetic DNA, which is that it was a calling, but not like something noble, like a priest. It was more desperate than that. We had no choice. This was what we were going to do. As soon as we could, we started to pretend to be on the radio in our bedrooms. We made makeshift control boards, and we had microphones, and we stole parts from relatives' homes that sort of looked radio-ish. I actually, in my high school, before photocopiers, there were mimeograph machines, and I shanghaied a mimeograph machine and printed out pretend broadcast logs for my bedroom that I would log the songs that I played and the commercials that I played. I had no choice. Everybody I know started the same way. They were 15. They pretended to be on the radio in their bedroom. They got the first job at a radio station. They got a first job at a radio station that was closest to their home, where they allowed you to hang around. And that's how I started. I hung around radio stations until somebody let me do something. Much trickier today with Sarbanes-Oxley. Much harder for a publicly traded company to let kids just hang around. In fact, it's hard for employees to get into radio stations now. Well, that key pass is expired. That key pass is expired. Well, does that mean I don't work here anymore? No, old Charlie just hasn't renewed your pass. Nothing to worry about there. But that's how most people get into radio. When I hear idiots talking about, well, there's no farm team in radio today, I'm like, really? When was there a farm team? There never was a farm team. Kids just hung around a radio station.
Oh, that is so sweet. And to learn about, you made your little logs. That's the cutest story I've heard. I started working at KFBK when I was 14.
Yeah. So you had the same sad luck.
I get it.
Did you go to your prom?
Yes.
Did you go to your prom?
I did go to my prom. Did you go to prom?
No. You're the only person in radio I know who went to their prom. You're it. Everybody else I know.
I heard you say that earlier.
Yeah, everybody else I know in radio, when asked if they went to their prom, they said, well, no, I was at the transmitter.
The transmitter site.
Yeah, I was at the transmitter, yeah.
Well, Walter, your voice, it's so smooth. It's so relaxing. You sound so good on the radio. Have you ever thought about, with your voice, you could be like a hypnotherapist? You could do ASMR or something. It's just so smooth.
Yeah, I sort of view this as hypnotherapy. By 1 o'clock Eastern, they'll all be asleep. There won't be a person awake.
Well, I was wondering, we've talked a lot about me moving to Las Vegas from California. I was wondering, have you been to Las Vegas? And if you have been, what are some of your favorite Las Vegas memories?
My favorite Las Vegas memories are leaving. Every time I've been to Las Vegas, it's one of those places I'm thrilled to get to and thrilled to leave. I've got about a 48-hour expiration date on Las Vegas. Living there is entirely different, because then I could go home. But just the process of getting from any casino to any hotel room is pretty much like going over the Rocky Mountains. It's an exhausting process in a wagon train. The distances are so vast, and my feet are so bad that it's exhausting for me to be there.
And then
being an introvert, whenever I've been there, it's been for a convention or a conference, surrounded by thousands of people who are very excited to see me, but I'm never excited to see them.
Oh, I understand that, when there's just so many people. Well, I would love to host you and your family sometime, and you guys come to Las Vegas and visit me, I was wondering if we did that, what are some things that you guys would want to do? Do you guys like magic shows or not overpacked conventions, but maybe do you guys like going to sports events or what are some things that you might want to do in Las Vegas?
I love magic shows. I was there, the last time I was there, I did go to David Copperfield. Tremendous fun. Saw Cirque du Soleil.
I love Cirque. That's one of my favorites, too.
Isn't that amazing? That is a magic show.
It's my favorite. Yeah, it's my favorite. I've seen about five of them now, and I love them so much. They're so skilled and talented.
And then I want to go to an over-the-top Gordon Ramsay restaurant.
Oh, yeah. That would be so fun. I went to Hell's Kitchen recently, and I went to his fish and chips. It was really, really good. We got a lot of yummy stuff, and then I got this one dessert, and it had that dry ice. So they brought out this pineapple sherbet, and it came out, and it was smoking everywhere. It was really, really good.
One of the things I noticed anytime they shoot inside a Gordon Ramsay restaurant is he's aware of a very important piece of research, which is that every waiter and waitress in his restaurants is fat. And they're fat on purpose, because the research shows that if you are served by a fat waiter or waitress, you will order more dessert and more booze.
Mm, yummy. I love that. That's probably true. I need to test that now.
That's your mission for the week. Kendall,
you're
the best. I am grateful that you are on Sterling on Sunday. I'm up against what they call, I'm up against a hard out. It's a hard out, and that's not like a sexual thing or anything. It's just the clock. I appreciate you being on Sterling on Sunday. Thank you very much, Kendall Toby. Coming up, you and I will talk about the most bizarre management statement I have ever heard. The president of ABC News, this woman said the dumbest thing she could have ever said. Coming up, and you, Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Judge Judy.
Don't play cutesy with me.
All right, coming up, you and I are going to listen to the conversation with Dove, an Israeli bus driver. Fascinating, his point of view on the horror show taking place in Israel. Dr. Dave Iser, your weather.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Hudson Valley's favorite jingle joint has a hooker problem. Details later. Strippers on the loose, Sterling at night.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I rate the 7 police commissions I served under during my career with the New York City Police Department. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
The CBS Radio Workshop.
Lesbians in space. Who wears sports bras?
So I can, like, take you out.
Shut up, really?
Yeah.
Please do.
Yes.
You want to go to Postino's or something?
I love Postino's. Board and bottle on Monday and Tuesday. So we could go tonight or tomorrow. Wait, I'm so down. What's your number? What's your name?
Ashley.
Ashley, cool. I will text you.
The CBS Radio Workshop.
Lesbians in space. Alien life with benefits.
You're a dinosaur, Sipowicz.
I'm a dinosaur.
You jeopardize that collar because it sticks in your throat on first grade.
It sticks in my throat, how you got it?
Every white guy in the department with second grade thinks he should have gotten my grade promotion. Half of you guys think I got it on my back.
Hey, Walter. On this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to give my opinion on the police commissioners I've served under during my 20-year career with the New York City Police Department. Now, I'm sure the police commissioner of the New York City Police Department is a very stressful job. You have a rabid press that'll never leave you alone. You got to keep everyone happy. You got to keep the public happy. You got to keep the politicians happy. And you got to keep the troops happy. It's a tough job. I'm going to try to be my fairest with the guys that I worked under. So from 1984 to 1989, Ben Ward was the police commissioner. I'd rate him as the worst. He fell asleep during my police academy ceremony. My father filmed it and couldn't figure out who the guy on stage was sleeping. He was often quoted saying ridiculous things and not really liked by the rank and file members of the department. From 1989 to 1990, we had a guy by the name of Richard J. Condon. I think he came on after Ward left early. He basically kept the ship, righted the ship, didn't cause any waves, didn't cause any problems, kind of not really indistinguishable from anybody else. From 1990 to 1992, we had Lee Out of Town Brown. Brown wasn't a bad guy, but he was a social climbing political animal. He always had his eye on the next job. Before arriving at the NYPD, he was the police commissioner at Atlanta, Houston, and then later on, he became the mayor of Houston. Brown was very big into community policing. And like I said, he always had his eye on the next job. Not a bad guy, but more of a politician. So from 92 to 94, we had Ray Kelly. Ray Kelly will be anything you want him to be. Under Mayor Dinkins, Ray Kelly really wasn't a crime fighter. The press loves Ray Kelly because he's got that Marine and I'm tough on crime, tough on cops thing. But people forget that when New York City was having riots and civil unrest, Ray Kelly was the police commissioner under Dinkins and didn't do much. From 94 to 96, we had Bill Bratton. Bratton, in my opinion, was the best. He was a law and order kind of guy with Giuliani, Jack Maples, and countless others. Their policies and the broken window program cleaned up New York City. From 96 to 2000, Howard Safer was our police commissioner. Now, Howard Safer originally started in the federal government. He ran the U.S. Marshals Service. I think Howard Safer was a fair and decent man, and he was generally liked by the rank and file members of the department. So from 2000 to 2001, we had Bernie Kerik. Kerik wasn't a bad guy, very tough on crime. Problem with Kerik was his little fiefdom around him, the guys he surrounded him with, they were bullies and they would mess with other NYPD members and transfer them to different places. So Kerik kind of gets mixed reviews. And then from 2002, I think it is, to 2013, Ray Kelly came back. And this time he was a crime fighter, which, come on, give me a break. So anyway, for more NYPD stories, check out my new book, NYPD, Law and Disorder.
All right, good evening. I'm Walter Sterling. The name of this show is Sterling on Sunday. We're here for 3 hours every Sunday night because no one else will do it. Look at my competition. The Emmys, the Oscars, World Series, Super Bowl, Kennedy Center Honors, People Choice Awards. Just look at that list. The guys on in the morning tomorrow and midday, who's their competition? Good morning, Kansas City. Good morning, Philadelphia. That's their competition. I'm up against the freaking Oscars. Just imagine that. Not anybody can do this. You and I are going to listen now to an amazing conversation that I just had with a bus driver in Tel Aviv. Let's listen to Dove. Dove is a bus driver in Tel Aviv in Israel. He drives hundreds, thousands of people a week to where they want to go, to work, to school, to their friends. He's in touch with the population of Israel in a profound way, much better than some serious official reporter or spokesperson. I trust Dove. On October 7th of last year, when you were going to work, when you were driving, when you were talking to your neighbors, and you heard that your friends and neighbors just a few miles away were being slaughtered, how did you feel?
I wasn't on my way to work. I was praying on a holiday called the Simchat Torah, which is a very big Jewish holiday, commencing the finishing of reading of the whole Torah every year and starting it fresh. So that day we heard sirens in the morning in Ramat HaSharon, which is just north of Tel Aviv. We didn't know what was going on. One of my neighbors said there's something going on down south. We didn't hear much. It's pretty much a day like Shabbat where a lot of us were disconnected from the media or from television. More information came at the end of the holiday at sundown, and obviously the days that went by, and as we heard more, we were more upset and more hurt, I would say. A little bit of upset feeling with our government, whose responsibility was to protect us, and they failed. And obviously anger at the people that carried out the attacks.
Hamas attacked you on a high Jewish holy day? Is that what you told me?
On a high Jewish holiday and on Shabbat. Similar similar to what happened back in the Yom Kippur War, where Israel was attacked from all the sides on the highest of holidays.
The atrocities that we've heard about rapes, beheading of babies, beheading of mothers in front of their children. Is this true?
It's very true. I've seen pictures. I know people that that were involved in taking the bodies off of the grounds and bringing them to a place where they can identify.
Well, Dove, you mentioned that friends and neighbors removed bodies from the ground. One body is obviously too many. In the initial attacks,
of course.
Did you hear about how many people were slaughtered? Did you get a sense of how many neighbors were murdered?
Neighbors, I wouldn't say neighbors. It's people who were slaughtered and murdered were, I would say, about 2 or 3 hour drive from where I live. The numbers, they're very hard to comprehend here. You know, we're talking in the around 1,000, I think more.
Thousands.
That were slaughtered from what I remember.
Thousands. Dev, let me ask you this. Do you feel today that the United States of America and allies are doing enough to fight off the attacks on your country?
I think that the government, the United States government, Joe Biden, and with all due respect, I think that he's not providing us with enough support. In the beginning of the war, we heard we were getting very strong words from him and some sort of feeling of commitment. But every push by the United States to get Israel to stop the war, I think, is a movement backwards and putting Israel in danger.
I don't understand when Americans say there's another side to this story, and we see thousands of people protesting and supporting the other side. I'm like, wait a minute. If somebody comes to my home in a black mask, breaks the window, grabs my baby, and beheads my baby, I don't know what other side there is. From my perspective, there is no other side, but it is your perspective that matters. It's yours that matters. How do you feel about that?
I'll tell you this much. Let's ask the American population a different question. Imagine a group of people from Mexico, including citizens of Mexico, illegally crossing the border into Texas, and within a matter of a few hours, beheading babies, raping women, and carrying out all sorts of attacks on U.S. citizens. How would the citizens of the U.S. feel? Oh, in an unprovoked.
You, your friends, your passengers, what is your point of view about President Trump?
What is our point of view of President Trump? We felt a lot more support from President Trump when he was president. There seemed to be a lot more talking between President Trump and Bibi Netanyahu. In essence, our view on President Trump is very positive. There was a lot more support from Trump on on the Israeli government, a lot more where there was a mutual bonding and a mutual acceptance between Bibi and Trump.
Trump, when asked about this war, says, if I had been president, this would have never happened. Do you think that's true?
If he was president, I wouldn't say that this would have never happened, because altogether the failure to protect the border with Gaza was Israel's responsibility, and Israel failed. But I do feel that there would be a lot more support from the U.S. government if Trump was president.
Dov, do you have a final message for Americans?
I'll tell you this much. As a citizen of Israel, there's a lot of Jews, there's a lot of Muslims, a lot of Christians here in Israel. The Arab population is among us. It's around us. The sense of security, it's scary a little bit. You have Ramadan coming up right now, starting next week. A lot of bus drivers that I work with, they're also Arab Israelis, and you don't know where to expect the next attack from. It could be It could be a bus driver running over people. It could be a truck driver running over. It could be just like we saw down south, the Arabs from Gaza, Palestinians, that were on a work visa in the bordering towns, doing all sorts of odd jobs, construction jobs, that took down notes and helped carry out these attacks as well.
Dove, thank you very much for your words today and your feelings and your thoughts. Prayers go to the people who are hostages in those tunnels, which is an unbelievable horror. I can't imagine the horror of having a 10-year-old daughter taken from my home and put in a tunnel with people she doesn't know, in darkness, underfed, and needing mommy and daddy. I can't imagine a greater horror, Dove.
Me, I don't want to imagine a greater horror.
No. All right, thank you very much for your time today. You're a good friend. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Take care.
Tonight, before I go to bed, a prayer for Israel. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by lesbians.
And how long have you been into women? I didn't say I was. Yeah, and half day.
Every email I get, I answer. Here's my email address. Walter M. Sterling, S-T-E-R. Walter M. Sterling at Gmail. I want you to send me your real mailing address in an email, and I will send you the custom brochure made for your trip and mine to the French Riviera this October. Time is running out, as they like to say. We have a limited number of seats. I refused to do a big tour because we're introverts. We need to be with each other quietly. We don't need any big distractions. This is a small batch vacation of introverts like me. I derive my energy from being alone. It took me a long time to realize that that's an introvert. There's nothing wrong with us. But you're an introvert. That's why you're listening to the radio right now, alone in the car, alone in the 18-wheeler, or on your way to the third shift, to the late shift. This is a special time. It's when we recharge. Introverts must have time alone. And we cannot do group think. We cannot brainstorm. We can't hang out. I used to hear friends say, I'd say, what did you do this weekend? They'd say, well, I just hung out with some friends. That sounds like hell to me. You know, we had a barbecue in the backyard. Yeah, that sounds like hell to me. I need the solitude. And when I have enough time alone, I recharge, and then I can be social. But every second that I'm in a social situation, I become depleted. That's an introvert. When they say we're going to do groupthink, my brain shuts down. I can't groupthink. Give me the problem. I go to the back of the cave, eat meat, and come up with a solution. Then I go back into the group. Here's the solution. But don't ask me any questions. This is the solution. That was always troublesome. I always had trouble in big companies because I don't want to sit around with you. Here's the answer. They used to say, well, that's arrogance. It wasn't arrogance. It was the only way I knew how to process a situation. I knew how to process it alone and then share it with you. And I look forward to being with you, and I look forward to doing the presentations. To me, when I hear people say, I have stage fright, I never have stage fright. I love being in front of a group of people. It's hard to explain. Being in front of a group of people alone on a stage to me is like being alone, period. I'm just alone because you're not going to talk to me. You're not going to quiz me. I don't have to mingle. I don't want to mingle. I don't know how to small talk. My mother actually did teach me how to talk, small talk. When we had to go to official, serious grown-up parties, she would say, talk about the shrimp and the weather and nothing else. And she was right. All anybody wants to hear is that the greatest gift you and I can receive is a request for help.
And my classroom should be as well air-conditioned as your favorite bar.
Next Sunday. All right. Right. Stay bright.